Welcome to the Collective Intelligence Podcast. Chris Manson, the CEO of Silobreaker, is joining me. We are recording this at RSA Conference in rainy San Francisco, unfortunately. Silobreaker tackles one of the toughest problems in security and intelligence today, which is data and overloads of data. They bring structure to unstructured open source and dark web data, and they help organizations visualize it, analyze trends, etc. I'm going to talk to Chris about some of the struggles that businesses are having analyzing and making sense of volumes of data and the journey from data to intelligence. So thanks for joining me, Chris. Appreciate it.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So we were just saying this is your fourth RSA. I've got quite a few more under my belt. What do you make of this?
Well, like we said, it's a bit of a circus, but it's good for us to get out here. I mean, we are based in London, and 60% of our business is from the US, right. And we do all that business out of the UK.
Yeah.
So these conferences and other events is important for us to come and actually meet people face to face.
Sure. I mean, the scale of this thing is ridiculous too. It's hard to imagine.
And it's just getting bigger. I mean, it's absolutely crazy. And it's not just the expo. I mean, it's so much going on.
Yeah.
In, I think, must be every hotel room suite are booked, you know, meeting rooms. You meet people everywhere. There are conferences on the back of this conference. And, you know, it's just a big meeting point.
Yeah, the first one I went to was 2002. So it was right after 9/11. So the attendance wasn't great to begin with, but it was fairly confined. It was in San Jose, and now it's like tens of thousands of people. It's a stark difference. So my characterization of what Silobreaker does in the intro that I read, was it accurate? I mean,
I think
the core of your business.
Yeah, I think it was definitely accurate. I mean, we see ourselves as a technology company more than as a cybersecurity company. I mean, our expertise is in building technology that makes sense of data, and our focus is on unstructured data.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Well, that's usually the type of data that overwhelms companies more than structured. We know that about 80% of all data in the world is unstructured. It's noisy, it's messy, it's difficult to process, and all of that. And I think there is a real need to use technology to process that data and basically enable companies and their analysts and their C-suite people to move up the value chain and not spend so much time searching and collecting and collating and actually get a much better situation picture quicker and clearer so they can make better informed decisions.
So are we talking strictly external data or stuff that's being generated internally?
Yeah, I mean, it could be both. I mean, the technology wouldn't know the difference, but I think most of our use cases are relying primarily on external.
Mm-hmm.
We do not go out there saying we can be your enterprise search engine and sit on top of your repositories of all the internal data. That's not at all what we do. But in some cases, of course, there is internal data that adds a dimension to the external data, and they want to have the analytics on top of both.
Mm-hmm. And so characterize the struggle that businesses are having with data. I mean, especially security systems are firing alerts all the time. It has to be unmanageable and, you know, need a solution from you or whoever just to kind of wrangle this in.
And it kind of takes us into threat intelligence. And I guess the literal meaning of threat intelligence is much, much broader than what the security industry has decided up to this point what threat intel is, right? And threat intel for most people right now is very much technical structured threat data. It's indicators, it's IP addresses, you have systems and feeds just spewing out huge amounts of that type of data. That becomes almost unmanageable, or it is unmanageable, and you can have tips and you can have SIEM system and all of that, as you should do. But I think it's becoming now a prioritization game because you just cannot address all of them, and most companies will only have resources to deal with, all right, I can patch 5 vulnerabilities this week, or I can, you know, reverse hash, you know, 5 of those, or, you know, whatever it might be. Then there's no way they're going to be able to go through all of that is sort of coming as an avalanche on a daily basis. So what they can do, though, is to use our type of technology and try to decide that priority by going outside the perimeter mm-hmm. and trying to understand the why and the motivation and what are people actually talking about right now.
Sure.
What's going on the open web? What are people talking about in the underground? In terms of vulnerabilities, you know, is there sharing of POC code? Are they selling, exploits, all that kind of things? And I think that's where we see, especially the bigger companies, have come to this realization that threat intel must be something much bigger than what we've done up mm-hmm. to this point. Cybersecurity is so much more than an IT problem. And I think especially when you want to contextualize things, when you want to enrich things, when you want to try to understand the why and the motivations and all of that,
sure.
you just have to go out outside your perimeter and look for that.
Yeah.
And that can be all the way out to start looking at geopolitics and world events and all that, because that's usually triggering motivations.
Sure.
Many times it's obviously money, but we know it's politics and ideology and religion and everything
yeah.
else. Or it could just be closer to the perimeter of just using unstructured data to enriching a malicious IP address. Why is it malicious? Why are people talking about it? You know, where does it seem to come from? And that's usually coming from the unstructured mm-hmm. side. So we focus very much on the technology side of that. We are not a collection company for like Flashpoint for the deep and dark web, but we work with Flashpoint
right.
because their type of data is primarily unstructured as well. And then mm-hmm. with our technology on top of that, it makes it easier for customers to consume their data as
sure.
well as data from the open web. And yeah. that's really where we're coming from.
So what's the user experience on your side when your technology is done massaging it and making, putting some context behind it? What are they seeing? Is it something that they need to still interpret a little bit, or is it kind of like finished?
No, yeah, it still requires interpretation. I think
yeah.
we are very open with saying this is not going to replace the need
sure.
for a human
right.
analysis on top
right.
of this, but we're trying to do much of the heavy lifting in terms of processing of the data
right.
and free up the time for the decision makers to interpret, analyze, and actually
yeah.
make decisions on back of it. We're not really there with the system is going to do all that for you. But I think today where companies really struggle is just the influx of data. And they may say, we have number of feeds, we have all these things
sure.
coming out. But it was a long time ago when access to data was the same as having an advantage, right?
Yeah.
Because access to data today is such a given, and it's really what you do with it that makes a difference.
So cyber is your sweet spot. Do you see an application for this beyond that? Physical security, insiders,
yeah.
things like that.
I do, and cyber is our sweet spot now, but it's not our history. I mean, we set out to build the technology really for other types of intelligence cases, geopolitical analysis, competitive intelligence, market intelligence, financial intelligence, whatever it might be. And cyber was really coming, knocking on our door and
sure.
saying, we have a need for this as well. Can you help us see the bigger picture, contextualize a lot of things of the technical stuff that goes on? And that's really how we ended up starting focusing on that and almost pivoting the company into
mm-hmm.
to cybersecurity. And that's about 75% of our business today. But we still have military organizations who are using it to assess threats in certain parts of the world. So their threat is not a cyber threat. It's usually a physical threat.
Right.
It's radical Islamist, whatever it might be in certain parts of the world. But they have exactly the same problem. There's a huge amount of data there. There's a huge amount of data on the open web. There's massive amount of data on the deep and dark web.
Right.
And what are they going to do with it? How can they? It's all about, I guess, getting situation pictures quicker and clearer, really regardless of what the topic is.
Yeah.
And I think that's really the power of the technology in that sense. To your point, I think the bigger organizations who've done threat intel for a while realize that it's very difficult to draw a line between what is cyber risk and what is physical risk.
Sure.
Because we know that they're dependent on each other, and then sometimes one is leading the other, but classing activism,
yeah,
that may be demonstrating outside your storefront, but they're likely to do some kind of, or trigger some sort of cyber event
right.
as well.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see maybe 2, 3, 5 years down the road how much the profession changes in terms of, these people are exclusive cyber today, may have to expand that into physical, into insiders or fraud or whatever the case may be, and you know, it's, you can't just live in that silo. It has to be kind of like this complete security picture.
Yeah, and I agree. And we see some of the, you know, big global banks today, I think, or other large companies kind of on the forefront of that type of thinking are doing that already. I mean, we've had examples where, you know, big global bank was looking at the geopolitical conflict in Yemen and wanted to understand what kind of missile capability the Houthi movement had, and if they had missile capability that could reach targets in UAE, because they had been part of their business was financing a lot of infrastructure projects there. So it was not another group within the bank. It was the cyber threat intelligence group that was mandated with that investigation.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of opens up the literal meaning now of threat intelligence into a completely new area and different type of risks.
Yeah.
Doesn't make the CISO's role any easier because he or she is now going to be able to understand those kind of risks as well. But I think for the overall threat landscape around the organization, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fascinating use case. I'm sure it's not typical.
No,
but,
it's not typical.
but it's an indicator
kind
of where things are moving.
Yep.
What's your first contact like with a user? Are they coming to you in a reactive kind of posture to something that's happened, or?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think in some cases, they've never heard of us. So, you know, when they haven't really thought about threat intel in this sense. So that is more of an educational process of actually making them think slightly outside, you know, what they may have done in the past. And in other cases, they know exactly what we do, and they are really well defined in terms of their needs and what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit of a combination, really, how we drum up business. It's it's inbound, it's the normal reaching out, it's conferences like this, and all of the above.
What are the biggest eye openers for users once they kind of see the structure you're bringing? Do they have the right grasp on what their exposure was out there, or, you know, how much people might be talking about their organization or just threats to their particular industry?
Sometimes they do, and many times it is an eye-opener. I think we've had numerous demos where we have shown them things that they were not aware of.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be easy things like, you know, email addresses mentioned, you know, in certain forums, or, you know, that type of or IP addresses that they weren't aware of associated with their company, with their name. But I think it's very much, I think the interesting part for us is to make sure that it fits into the workflow as well. I think there are a lot of products out there. They demonstrate well. They give a very, very good first impression. And I think you need to do that.
Yeah.
But unless it fits into the workflow, it's going to be like, you know, a firework display. Then you go home and say, "Yeah, that was nice," and go back and do what you've done in the past. So I think we focus not just to develop technology that can do all these things, but also make sure that the product fits into that workflow that they have already. So they can, you know, once they buy the product, it's a short learning curve to get them up and running and have it having that way. But I think the real eye opener, I think, is usually when they see what you actually can do with unstructured data. Because if we can use technology to find structure in unstructured data, then we can display it with traditional visualizations, whether it's networks or pie charts or whatever it might be. But the difference is that they have when we are populating those graphs or charts, it's coming, you know, from the unstructured side on the fly, and you can now start seeing things that visually may look like structured data, but it's actually not. It's coming and it's being extracted from the unstructured. And I think that is usually the big eye opener for people.
Mm-hmm. And executives love charts, right? And you need to make a decision, you need a chart, right?
And many of our customers, that's part of the workflow, right? The analyst team, you know, they part of what they do is disseminating to stakeholders, and the more graphics in that dissemination, the better.
Yeah.
So for sure, yeah.
Just to stay on eye openers for a second, I know you partner with Flashpoint for the dark web side of it. You guys focus primarily on open sources. Are there eye openers once people understand, oh, there's a dark web side to this? There's an exposure there. I mean, what kinds of things do you hear in that vein?
Yeah, I think why the partnership with Flashpoint came so naturally was because when we talk to clients, they say, this is really great. Can we get deep and dark web data in here as well?
Yeah.
And I think Flashpoint had the reverse of that. They said, this is really great, but what about the open source technology that right. can sit on top of this data? So we are so complementary because we are not a collection business at all. We don't have that skill set. We don't have that tradecraft at all. And what made sense, of course, from a customer perspective was to be able to look into either the open or the deep and dark web, but perhaps more importantly, the bridges between the two, right?
Sure.
Where do certain trends start? And they don't always start in the dark web and deep and dark web and then get to the open. Many times they just start there and then the chatter starts mm-hmm. in the deep and dark web. And I think that more holistic view across the data types and the data sets is exactly what a customer wants,
sure.
right?
Sure.
And I think the difficulty for many customers is, of course, to consume data that often comes just in reports. The report and the content might be absolutely first class, but it's still a report amongst many other reports.
Right.
And I think that's another case where you can consume that data in a different way if you put a layer of analytics on top of it, then
right.
you have a more strict use case that you are trying to mm-hmm. understand better and then use the data as
sure.
evidence for something rather than reading a report, which
yeah.
becomes very linearly and linear and time consuming.
Mm-hmm. So much in security happens on social media in terms of information sharing. I'm thinking of Twitter in particular. A big internet bug breaks, everybody's talking about it on Twitter, sharing IPs, sharing domains, sharing some kind of data that might be useful. In the moment, I'm thinking like WannaCry. I remember WannaCry when it broke, there was so much, we're seeing this, the kill switch, everything.
Yep.
How can you guys help in a situation like that? I mean, your customers come to you and say, hey, this is kind of like real time, not historical, what's going on?
Yeah, I think it's important to differentiate between intelligence and response, right?
Sure.
So we don't do response in that sense. We don't really do the forensics to trying to understand the mm-hmm. technical aspects of a new malware or whatever it might be. But you could definitely see when WannaCry came out, where does the story break? And then where does it go? When does it go mainstream? And when do people pick it up in various channels mm-hmm. and so on? And I think that's just part of the intelligence aspect. I think when something breaks like that, most organizations are focusing entirely on response,
right?
And it might be post that first response that they can sit back and think, okay, what actually happened here?
Sure.
And what can we learn from that? And building up our own knowledge base in terms of intelligence, what were the signs and should
right.
we have seen it earlier than when
right.
we actually saw it and so on.
Yeah.
So I think that's usually the big value then.
I don't think anybody's threat modeling an NSA exploit for ransomware. give me a favorite use case or customer story. I know you can't name customers. I wouldn't expect you to, but...
No, I can't mention customer. A favorite use case. I think what we really like, and it's not necessarily a favorite use case, is the use of the tool across so many different use cases. I mean, we, physical security or part of cybersecurity, helping them prioritize, could be anything from patch management or whatever they want to do.
Sure.
The physical security example I gave you, and I think when we think about threat intel and we see customers think about risk in a much broader sense than traditional threat intel, I think that's what we get a real buzz because
right.
that's where our tool is becoming so effective and so powerful. Because for us, the data ingest is not limited.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yes, we don't bring in sports or entertainment necessarily.
Sure.
There's a lot of that coming anyways. Because I think that's how we started getting traction in cyber, that a lot of people were really only looking at cybersecurity data. And when they wanted to take that bigger picture, they didn't have that data. They couldn't
yeah.
look at geopolitics, or they couldn't understand the whys. And I think for us, it's big ingest, and then make sure that the tool can slice and dice it down to a very, very detailed use case. But it doesn't change the data set per se. It's just that the tool have now sliced through it and
sure.
can present it in a certain way. I think
right.
that's really powerful
right.
When you see that in action.
All right. right, I think that's a good place to leave it. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks very much. Enjoyed it.